The outlaws stared at the elderly lady in the pork pie hat.
"I'm running away from a children's party," she repeated.
"Oh," said William blankly.
"Yes, I'll tell you all about it. It's rather a long story. I don't know whether you know a ghastly child who lives in the neighbourhood called Violet Elizabeth Bott."
Well, yes," said William guardedly. "In a sort of way we do."
"We've heard of her," said Henry, imitating William's caution. "I think we've seen her," said Ginger.
"Once or twice," said Douglas.
"I believe she lives somewhere near here, doesn't she?" said William, assuming the imbecile expression that he fondly imagined to denote wondering innocence.
"Oh, yes, yes, quite near. At the Hall," said the woman. "Well, I'm her mother's godmother, and that's how the whole thing begins. Aunt Jo, her mother calls me. I couldn't stand her, even as a child. I haven't seen her for donkey's years. She's been pestering me to come and see her, and I've kept putting it off and putting it off, but I happened to be passing through this part of the country, so I thought I'd take the bull by the horns and get it over. So I wrote and told her that I'd spend today with them. Actually, I'm on my way to Paris. I go to Paris once a year to get the cobwebs blown away. I arrive this afternoon, and I find that it's their revolting child's birthday, and they're having a party for it, and for me, I gather. A children's party, if you please. And, to add the final touch of horror, they're going to have those nauseating kissing games that made children's parties such a torture to me when I was a child. Well, I told myself that as I was her guest, I must go through with it, noblesse oblige, and there's not to reason why, and the rest of it. And then, you know what? I suddenly realised that I couldn't. I just couldn't. The very thought of it turned my stomach and chilled my blood. I remembered that once, when I was a child, I'd run away from a children's party. And I decided to do it again. So I just sloped off. And here I am." William drew a deep breath.
"Crikey," he said faintly.
"And if you knew what that child was like, you wouldn't be surprised," said Aunt Jo.
"We do," said William.
"We aren't," said Ginger. "We'd rather die a thousand deaths," said Henry.
"We sloped off too, and here we are too," said Douglas.
"What, you mean..."
"We've run away from it too," said William. "It chilled our stomachs too."
"Ha!" Aunt Jo's hearty laugh rang out. "So we're all in the same boat. Well, we must stick together. They'll probably send out a search party." She threw a swift glance round. "You haven't chosen a very good hiding place. I saw you from the path quite clearly."
"We hadn't got to having a hiding place yet," said William with dignity. "We were just having a little talk about civilization. We froze all right, pretended to be tree trunks. You wouldn't have seen us if Douglas hadn't started yelling.
Well, I'm not so sure about that. Anyway, we must find a better one and..."
Oh! She stopped abruptly. There was the sound of voices in the distance. Mrs. Bott's querulous voice rent the air.
"Auntie Jo! Auntie Jo!"
Then came a confused murmur of children's voices.
"Heavens alive!" said Aunt Jo. "They're after us! Behind the log! Quick!"
Nimbly she flung herself full length behind the log. The others followed. Craning his neck round the edge of the log, William watched a rabble of children, headed by Mrs. Bott, straggle along the path. Violet Elizabeth, dressed in a frilly, lace-trimmed white party dress, brought up the rear. She looked sulky and aggrieved.
"We can't start the party without her, that's flat," Mrs. Bott was saying. "And someone said they'd seen her come into the woods, so in the woods she must be. She must have gone for a little stroll and lost her way. Want to play postman's knock?"
shrilled Violet Elizabeth.
All right, love, you shall. You shall, but we've got to find Auntie Jo first. We can't start the party without her. She might have tripped over something and broke her leg or got caught up in a rabbit trap. She's close on 60, poor old dear. She'd be helpless in a rabbit trap. Helpless. Want to play Puthman's knock? Want to play Gif in the ring?"
wailed Violet Elizabeth. The little procession straggled on. Aunt Jo popped up from behind the log.
"The impertinence of the woman," she said. "Close on 60, indeed. I'm 69, 70 next month. Oh, The impertinence! And rabbit trap, indeed. I'd make short work of any rabbit trap, I can tell you. Now, come on. We'll get out of the woods and go somewhere else. Follow me. She strode on ahead of them, flourishing her umbrella.
William felt slightly disconcerted at having the leadership taken out of his hands. But there was something exhilarating about Aunt Jo, and indeed about the whole situation. All feelings of guilt and apprehension dropped from the four of them as they followed the small, resolute figure.
"Once we get out of the woods, we'll be all right," said Aunt Jo. "They'll never have the sense to start looking anywhere else. Set of blithering nitwits!"
But it wasn't so easy to get out of the woods. The search party had split up, and small boys and girls, singly or in couples, were searching the woods. Violet Elizabeth's wail,
"Want to play Postman's Knock?"
seemed to rise up from all points of the compass at once. Over and over again, Aunt Jo and the four outlaws had to plunge into bushes or merge themselves hastily into the undergrowth just in time to escape detection. Aunt Jo's spirit seemed to rise higher and higher at each narrow escape. "Come on! Come on!" she would say as she rallied her band, striding on before them, brandishing her umbrella. "Once more, unto the breach!" Suddenly, William stopped at the end of a path that led under thick, overhanging trees.
"This leads out of the woods," he said. "It's always boggy, especially when it's been raining, and it was raining last night. Your feet go squishing right into the mud, but I bet you don't mind a bit of mud."
"Indeed I don't," said Aunt Jo. "Forward the Light Brigade!"
The path led out of the woods onto the lane by the side of a house. Aunt Jo and the four scraped through the hedge that bordered the woods and stopped for a moment by the gate of the house. A large notice, "To Let," hung on it.
"Listen," said Aunt Jo.
The clamour was growing nearer, the voices upraised excitedly. Their pursuers had found their footmarks and were hot on their trail. Aunt Jo threw a glance up and down the lane. It held no possible place of concealment.
"Quick, into the garden," she said, opening the gate.
The outlaws followed her into the garden and looked round. It was a square, bare patch enclosed by a fence, without tree or shrub.
"Caught like rats in a trap," groaned Aunt Jo.
"With our days numbered and our doom sealed," said Douglas.
But at that moment, the door of the house opened, and a smart-looking woman came out, holding a key in her hand.
"Oh, good," she said. "What a piece of luck. You've come to look over the house, haven't you? Well, I'll give you the key."
And she handed the key to Aunt Jo.
"Perhaps you'll kindly take it back to the house agents when you've finished. I promised to take it, but I'm catching a train, and I'll miss it if I don't make a dash for the bus now."
She ran down to the gate.
"It's a rotten house," she called as she vanished from sight. "But you may as well look over it now you've come."
"Quick!" said Aunt Jo.
They scrambled into the house and slammed the door.
"Saved," said Aunt Jo, "saved by a hair's breadth. From the jaws of a thousand deaths," said William. "They'll get to the end of the path and they'll not find us, and so they'll go home and have their rotten old party without us."
He looked round at the empty, dust-laden hall and bare, uncarpeted staircase.
"Gosh, we can have some jolly good games here, better than any old postman's knock."
He went into the back room and called,
"Hey, this is a smashing room. It's got a cupboard all up one side and a great big fireplace that you can see the sky through the chimney. And, gosh, a rat's just run off into a hole. We could have a rat hunt here. Let's have a look at the other rooms."
He went into the front room and returned almost immediately, looking pale and horror-stricken.
"They're coming," he said. "They're coming in through the gate, all of them. Gosh, they'll look through the windows and see us. Upstairs, come on, quick," said Aunt Jo. "Out of their range of vision, come along, on, Stanley, on, charge, Chester, charge!"
They plunged upstairs to a landing, up another flight of stairs to another landing, up a narrow ladder set against an open trapdoor into a low-ceilinged attic with a small dormer window overlooking the front garden. The attic had evidently been used for storing purposes. Rows of apples in various stages of decay lay on slatted shelves along the wall. William peered through the window.
"Gosh, they're all there," he whispered. "Old Mr. Bott's with them now. They're talking away like mad. Let's open the window and listen."
Cautiously, he opened the window, and standing well away from it, they watched the scene below. Violet Elizabeth's party now filled the small front garden. Its members wandered from window to window, looking into the empty rooms. Frankie Parsons was trying ineffectually to climb a piece of trellis. Carolina Jones was pricking blisters of paint with her thumbnail on one of the window frames. Mr. Bott, tired of waiting for them at home, had tracked them down to the empty house, and Mrs. Bott was explaining the situation to him.
"She's been set on by four great men, Botty," she was saying tearfully, and dragged into this house."
"How do you know she has?" said Mr. Bott.
"Well, we found the footmarks along that muddy path. Her footmarks and the footmarks of the four great men that was dragging her along."
Mr. Bott considered this for a moment or two. Then, "How do you know they were her footmarks?"
"Her boots, Botty. She has a made special with pointed toes. She used to wear them like that when she was a girl, and she still has them made that way. And we saw the marks of them, plain as plain, together with the marks of them four great men that were dragging of her away into this house."
"How do you know they dragged her into this house?" said Mr. Bott.
"Well, you could see their muddy footmarks on the concrete path going up to the front door. Look at them, Botty, look at them. There's her boots with the pointed toes, and there's the footmarks of them four great men dragging her along." "Want to play Boothman's Knock?"
demanded Violet Elizabeth shrilly.
"Want to play it now?" "Oh, they'll have made away with her by now, like as not," wailed Mrs. Bott. "Oh, Botty, go fetch the police, quick."
"Sounds a funny tale to me," said Mr. Bott.
"I want my tea," said Frankie Parsons dolefully. "I want my tea," chorused the other guests. "Violet Elizabeth said there was jelly and cream cakes and sandwiches and fruit salad," said Frankie Parsons. "I want jelly and cream cakes and sandwiches and fruit salad. Want jelly and cream cakes and sandwiches and fruit salad,"
wailed the chorus.
"I want to play those games,"
wailed Violet Elizabeth. She looked around her, crazed with frustration. She opened her mouth again.
"If we don't, I'll scream and I'll scream and I'll scream till I'm sick. Break a window, Botty, break a window."
And Violet Elizabeth, extending her mouth even wider, emitted her ultimate threat.
"I can!"